Hi, I'm David Crowe. Thank you for tuning in to episode 189 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com, Crowe with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. We're here every Tuesdays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on PRN.FM, or you can download the show as a podcast. You can listen to any of the last five episodes over the phone by dialing 701-719-0990. And remember, I don't know that you're a listener until I hear from you, so send me a message. Let me know how you stay in touch with the show and what you like about it, or don't. If you include your mailing address, I'll send you a little thank you gift. We have a very long interview today, so let's get right to it and hear about homeopathy in British Columbia, Canada. Anke Zimmermann is a naturopathic physician and classical homeopath with a special interest in childhood development and behavioral disorders such as autism, ADHD, anxiety, and aggression, and more. Her favorite treatment modality is homeopathy. She's been in clinical practice for 27 years and lives and works in beautiful Souk on Vancouver Island. I contacted her because she published a case report on treating a child with aggression and other behavioral problems with homeopathically diluted rabies saliva. And this started a real kerfuffle, which we'll definitely get into soon. Her website is drzimmerman.org, which I will put in the show notes so that you get the right number of M's and N's and Z's. Welcome to the show, Dr. Zimmermann.
Thank you so much, David, for having me. It's a pleasure.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about this child situation and how you treated him and why you decided to do it in the way that you did.
All right. So as you already explained, I'm a homeopathic as well as naturopathic doctor. And just a word about homeopathy. In homeopathy, the basic tenet is that a substance that can cause symptoms in a healthy person can be used to treat similar symptoms in someone who already has those symptoms. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's why it's called homeopathy, after homeos, the Greek word for similar, and mm-hmm. pathos, suffering. So the idea is that like cures like. So with this in mind, I'll tell you a little bit about this particular case. And I've seen many cases similar to that, so this is not an isolated case. A young boy was brought in with concerns of aggression as well as difficulty falling asleep at night. And after some questioning, I found out that this was fairly recent. So he was 4 years old, but this particular problem had only been present for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. The mother also explained that he was growling and hiding under tables and was afraid of werewolves. And just based on those few bits of information, I was already suspicious that he might have been bitten by a dog. Mm-hmm. Remember, like, just like. So he was, you know, growling, he was aggressive, he was afraid of werewolves, and he had trouble sleeping. And he was also very bright and entertaining. And I had mm-hmm. seen quite a few similar children before, so right away it made me think of this. So I asked the mother if he had been bitten by a dog. And she said, oh, now that you mention it, about 2 years ago he was in fact bitten on the beach. He had some food in his hand and a dog wanted it, and accidentally, you know, the dog wasn't malicious, he just wanted the food.
Right.
And accidentally bit his hand
right.
and broke the skin. So immediately I thought of this particular remedy. It's a very special remedy, which happens to be made from the saliva of a rabid dog. All right?
Right. And how many times does a homeopathic remedy get diluted? Or am I jumping
well,
the gun here?
Yeah, so that depends on the remedy. So in this particular case, I gave a 200 CH, which means that the original remedy, which actually was developed in 1833. That's quite an interesting story about how the doctors got it and figured it out. Anyways, the original substance is taken, sterilized, okay? So there's no living rabies virus in the saliva. Mm-hmm. And then it is diluted and agitated in a 1 to 100 ratio many times, excuse me. In the case of the remedy in which I gave, the first dose, I believe, was like 200. So it would have been 200 times. One in 100, then you take one part of that, again, mix it with 100 parts of water and alcohol, shake it up. This is all done by machines and in laboratories, okay? Mm-hmm. Somebody doesn't do this in their backyard. So then you have a 1 in 1,000 dilution. And then, again, one part of that is, again, diluted with another 100 parts of water and alcohol and shaken hard again, and so on. And in this case, it was repeated 200 times.
So, effectively, there is nothing left?
No, nothing, really. Like, there wouldn't be a single molecule of rabies or even a single molecule of saliva or anything in that particular remedy that I gave.
Right. I guess there is about three arguments you could make about against alternative remedies. One is that they're dangerous, and that would be a bit hypocritical coming from the allopathic medical community that in the United States kills approximately 100,000 people a year with properly prescribed drugs. But in this case, the other argument that could be made is, well, it couldn't possibly do anything because there's nothing there except water and alcohol. So how do homeopaths address that concern that you really don't have anything?
Well, of course, that's the million-dollar question, right? And the argument that's usually leveled by skeptics is there's nothing in these remedies, and we don't have a mechanism that would explain how they could possibly work, therefore they can't work.
Right.
You know?
It reminds me of the engineer, I think, in the 1950s who analyzed a bee with the best engineering, aerodynamic engineering expertise he had and concluded that bees can't fly because he couldn't explain how they could fly.
Well, it's something like that, and quite honestly, I cannot tell you how homeopathic remedies work. Like, we really do not have a generally agreed upon consensus. However, there are some very interesting, you know, things going on in science, physics, and so on, water science, very interesting, that may ultimately help us to explain how it works. In the meantime, all I can tell you is that we think of it as working more like a kind of information or energy or frequency rather than a physical biochemical substance, and that our body can somehow understand this information or energy or frequency and adjust itself in the appropriate way and heal itself.
I mean, could it be just a placebo if the boy and the mother and you believe in this, that's enough?
I mean, these 4 years old, 4-year-old children don't really know about placebos, and I mean, as I said, like, this is what I do every day. I've been practicing for 27 years. I have treated many babies, young children.
Mm-hmm.
I've treated a few animals, you know, myself and friends. They don't know what a placebo is.
Right.
We have a tremendous body of scientific research. Actually, tremendous is maybe an overstatement, but there are definitely hundreds and hundreds of studies using homeopathic remedies, including tissue cultures, microorganisms, gallops of all things, fish, tadpoles. You know, they don't know what a placebo effect is, right?
Right, right. I believe that the 2008 Nobel Prize winner, Luc Montagnier, who was given a prize for discovering HIV, has said nice things about homeopathy, or he's not nice things, he said he takes it seriously. Which I guess is a nice thing, but
yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So how did you, you know, what did you actually give this child? Did the child take it orally, or
yes, a couple of pellets, you know, a couple of pellets in the office, send them home.
Right.
And he gradually improved, and you know, everybody was happy. So.
How long of a period of time did this improvement take?
Didn't take very long. Like, there was an improvement fairly shortly, and I saw him for several months. I mean, and he had a couple more doses, and that was the end of it.
Right. And then you decided, with the consent of the mother, to document this on your website?
That's correct. I have a lot of case histories on my website. I've been practicing for a long time, as I mentioned, and homeopathy is very complex. And the best, one of the best ways to learn about homeopathy is by reading case history.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first 10 years, after I discovered homeopathy in naturopathic college and so on, and afterwards when I graduated, I spent almost every waking hour of the day reading case histories and studying homeopathy. And that's how I really became a good homeopath. And I went to lots and lots of seminars, and they were usually case histories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who had recorded a patient, or there would be a live case, and he would take the case, and the students would observe, and we would analyze and try and understand, you know, how you get the information, how you analyze the information, how you match the data that we have to the remedies that we know, etc. It's a fairly complex process. We have over 7,000 different remedies, and it can be daunting to study homeopathy. But I got so much out of reading case history, so that when I started to, you know, have my own practice, I immediately also started to write case histories and publish them to help my colleagues and to help, you know,
right,
future students, because that's how I learned, right?
You're in British Columbia, in Canada?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is homeopathy considered a legal modality in British Columbia?
Well, homeopathy is quite legal. I mean, I'm a naturopathic doctor by license.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a homeo, and all naturopathic physicians get training in homeopathy. In my case, I was really bitten by the bug and took a lot of many years of additional intensive training, you
mm-hmm.
know, after graduation. And this just went on, and I'm still studying every day. So in my case, that was my main interest.
Right.
But there are many other homeopathic practitioners out there that have a different background. Like, there are many medical doctors who are homeopathic experts, and chiropractors, acupuncturists, nurses. So people come to homeopathy from all sorts of backgrounds. Some are just homeopaths, you know. So homeopathy is not registered as a profession in British Columbia, but it is legal.
Right, so you're registered as a naturopath, so
does
homeopathy sort of within the legal system in British Columbia sort of come under that umbrella?
No. As I mentioned, as a naturopath, we all have training in homeopathy and are allowed to practice homeopathy, but you do not have to be a registered healthcare professional to be a homeopath or practice homeopathy.
Oh, okay. But I just wanted to set the ground, because then there's some pushback to what you did. So how did this case study start to get more attention?
Okay, so what happened is I wrote it up, which, you know, was fine, etc. And at some point I cross-posted it to Facebook.
Okay.
And about 2 weeks later, my Facebook page came under attack by a homeopathic skeptics organization.
Right, and do you know the name of this organization?
No, I can't remember it right now. Somebody alerted me to it. They sent me a message saying, you know, we see you're under attack, and I received a ton of hateful comments. This was about something else I had posted.
Right.
I can't even remember what it was, because it's a few months ago now. And they worked their way back through my website, and after some time, 2 weeks later, they found what I had posted about this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when things really went, you know, kind of berserk.
Right.
And I received, like, an unbelievable amount of hate mail and threats. And
threats, like physical threats?
Physical threats, also threats to be reported to the police, the authorities, the media, etc.
Which is pretty funny, because you just put up a public posting saying what you'd done, so if the police had been interested, they wouldn't look too far, would they?
Right.
Now, what is this skeptics organization saying about homeopathy, that it doesn't work? In which case...
Well, there are a number of them. You know, I haven't looked into it too deeply, but there's an upsurge of skeptics organizations around the world, and you know, they have a number of different goals, and some of them are very against homeopathy for a number of different reasons. I can only speculate. One of them being that we really don't have a scientific explanation of how it works. So, I mean, personally, I can understand how somebody can be skeptic about homeopathy. Let me tell you a little story about what happened to me in naturopathic college.
Right.
So I had just, you know, in order to attend, to be allowed to attend naturopathic college, you have to take 3 years of pre-medical sciences, including chemistry, biology, organic chemistry, etc. Mm-hmm. So I knew this, and I had already now finished my three-year undergraduate degree as a Bachelor of Science.
Right.
And then the naturopathic training is 4 years. And the first 2 years is basically just like medical school. All the basic sciences, you know, your anatomy, physiology, differential
right.
diagnosis, laboratory analysis, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no therapies. And at the time, we started learning about our alternative therapies in third year.
Mm-hmm.
So nutrition and botanical medicine and acupuncture, et cetera, that all made sense, right?
Right.
I was quite excited.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they tried to teach us homeopathy, I thought I had to drop out of school because I couldn't wrap my head around it, and I thought that they were trying to turn us into quacks, you know?
Right, right. I mean, as somebody who studied biology in university, I have to admit I have a hard time understanding this, but I think I have enough humility to understand that not everything I can't understand is necessarily wrong. It might be just that I don't understand it.
Well, and just because we don't understand something doesn't mean we shouldn't keep trying to understand it. You know, like that's how what science is all about. It's somebody's curious, they ask a question, right? Like, how come this happens? And then people do research and you try and figure it out. And, you know, that's an ongoing process. It never stops.
Yes. Yeah, so how did you come to terms with
homeopathy? Yeah, so I came to terms with it because I had a personal experience. So here we were about a month or two into this homeopathy course, and the main distributor of homeopathic remedies at the time, Dolisos, had come by and given all 13 of us, like we only had 13 students in the whole year, little first aid kits with homeopathic remedies in them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I took it home dejectedly, tossed it under my desk, and tried to grapple with whether or not I would have to drop out of school, you know, because of homeopathy. And then right around that time, in the middle of the night, I woke up with a hugely inflamed left tonsil.
Uh-huh.
My left tonsil had suddenly blown up to the size of a golf ball. Like, I woke up,
right.
I was in severe pain. I felt my throat was like on fire.
Right.
I felt it, I could feel it through my throat. I looked in the mirror and the tonsil was almost obstructing my throat. This came out of nowhere.
Which normally would be cause to go to the emergency department.
Well, just about. You know, I was thinking, like, what am I going to do? I had roommates at the time. They were all sleeping. And I was living, like, in this tiny, far-off place. And I remembered all of a sudden, I'm thinking, wait a minute. The professor just talked to us about sore throats and homeopathy. And then slowly came back to me as I was waking up more that he was talking about these remedies. And there was one that was better for right-sided complaints, and another one that was better for left-sided complaints, and so on, with pain radiating to the ear. And then I remembered that the remedy was made from snake venom, which didn't help my confidence that much, but then I thought, what the heck, I'm dying, so why don't I take a look and see what's in that first aid kit?
Right.
And you know what? That remedy was in there.
Mm-hmm.
It was Lachesis mutus. It's a remedy made from the venom of the Bushmaster snake, the largest venomous snake in South America.
Right. And if that's, if you, I believe it's a very venomous snake.
Very. It's a very dangerous snake.
Yes.
And anyways, I knew already that with all this process of dilution and potentization and agitation and so on, that there would be nothing, like no venom left in the remedy. So I figured, what the heck, you know, I'm in really big trouble, and there is this remedy, and I'm just going to take a couple of pills.
Mm-hmm.
So I put them under my tongue and lie down. And within about 5 minutes, I felt a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It was really amazing, actually. And I thought, wow, I'm actually feeling better. That's amazing. So I just lied there, and at some point, I must have drifted off to sleep because I woke up in the morning, and I woke up, and I thought, Wait a minute. Something strange happened last night. Oh, I had a really severe sore throat. Oh, my God. Oh, I don't feel anything, you know. Then I felt it, and it was like there was a little tiny bit of pain, but I checked in the mirror. The tonsil was back to normal. And I thought, holy smoke, like, what just happened? I can't believe what just happened.
Right.
So that is what turned me into a homeopath. So then after that, I was, wow, I'm going to pay attention. There's something to it, you know?
Right. You've seen it work.
Yeah, and then in my next semester, we had a different homeopathy teacher, somebody who was very experienced and very enthusiastic, and, you know, he made a huge impression on me, and I still am very grateful to him for the great training. Mm-hmm. And I just never looked back, you know. Then I became a complete homeopathy fanatic.
Yes. You don't want to use the word fanatic around the skeptics.
I couldn't deny it. You know, here I was a complete skeptic, right, ready to quit school after investing 5 years in my university and naturopathic college training, thousands and thousands of dollars, 5 years of my life.
I was
ready to walk away, you know.
Right. It's interesting to me that there was such a negative reaction because, you know, this is not one of those cases where the child got sicker or died or something where they could come back to you and say, look, you treated with homeopathy and he should have gone to the hospital. The mother was happy with the child's change in behavior. You saw the remarkable change. So what's the issue, right? I mean, they could be saying he should have gone to a psychiatrist who would have put him on, you know, pretty potent medications, and the success of that is not so high. He might have ended up a lifetime on psychiatric medications, not functioning at his potential.
That could have happened. I mean, that's what quite often happens with children, you know. Now they're routinely given all sorts of different pretty heavy-duty psychiatric medications.
Yes. So it's not like the alternative that the allopathic medical community could have offered. It would have been guaranteed to work. And I mean, it's remarkable to me that so many people who do get diagnosed with psychiatric illness and take the allopathic route end up on that drug for a long time, if not essentially forever.
Yeah.
But it went even higher.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, so, I mean, there was an assault, like a massive assault on my webpage and on me, you know. So, as I said, hundreds and hundreds of comments a day. I couldn't delete them fast enough. And also my website came under attack. I received phone calls. I received emails. Like about 50%, maybe 60% hateful, and really severely so.
Mm-hmm.
And about 40% extremely positive.
Right. I'm just wondering why people would hate this so much. It seems strange.
It is very strange.
You know, I could understand people saying homeopathy doesn't work. You know, this is all you and the mother are deluded. It couldn't have done anything because we don't know how it could possibly work. I could understand that, but I can't understand people physically threatening you, yelling at you.
Oh, yeah. Like, want to see some of them? I can read you a couple of them.
read a couple.
Yeah. For example, this one was one of the worst. Oh, yeah. This was funny. Actually, some of them were funny. I believe I have been bitten by a vampire. Can you please give me some magic homeopathy water to cure me?
Okay, well, at least that's a sense of humor.
Yeah, that's true. Then you have other ones like, this quack doctor needs to know what a baseball bat feels like. We all know the justice system will do nothing and keep their heads buried up their asses.
Okay, I was going to guess where the head was going. So, yeah, that's a threat with a baseball bat. That's definitely a physical threat against your person.
If that was my child, I'd find you, punch you, and drag you to the police. What a completely unscientific, negligent thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I should explain. So once, you know, again, there was lots of attack, and then one person in particular engaged me and, you know, tried to query me, and he said things like, did you or did you not give a known human pathogen to a child? did you not do this, et cetera, et cetera. So I said to him, who are you, the Inquisition or something?
Right.
And then he said, well, I'm going to report you. And he did, and he actually, I don't know exactly who called Health Canada or who called our provincial health minister, provincial health officer and the media, but, you know, it was one or two people that started calling the authorities, and I believe this one person in particular, because I engaged him and, you know, just rattled his chain a little, he probably had his ego crushed a little and decided to go right ahead and report me. And then he also ended up filing a complaint against me with the college.
With which college?
The Naturopathic College.
Naturopathic College, with which you're registered. I wonder why people care so much about it. I mean, particularly, like I say, and this isn't a case where it's not like the mother went public and said, you know, my son was treated homeopathically and died. You know, I want justice. This is a case where the mother agreed with you that the child had improved.
Yes.
So, but I guess I think down below there's this thing. Okay, you were treating with rabbit saliva diluted.
Yes.
So maybe you were endangering this child by an exposure to the rabies.
Okay, and this is again, you know, that somebody may think this who doesn't know anything about homeopathy. But I mean, why would I want to do such a thing? Anybody who actually read my blog post, which was quite detailed and explained homeopathy, okay? This is much less about this particular case, but about homeopathy in general.
Right.
That's my take on it. Would have realized very quickly that, you know, there was nothing in it. Like, I explained this very clearly. And anybody who knows anything about homeopathy knows that, you know, that either the remedies are extremely diluted and only have a few molecules in them, or in the majority of cases, you know, we don't have any molecules of the original substance in it. However, this is where it feeds back to the skeptics organization and the general movement against homeopathy. So Big Pharma is essentially quite threatened by homeopathy for three reasons. And Pharma actually supports some of these skeptics organizations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said before, the organizations, some of it comes out of, you know, true scientific concern. Okay, we don't know how it works, so we should be skeptical. I can understand. Like I said, I came from that angle myself originally, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the other agenda is, or there's another agenda, which is to eradicate homeopathy. So from its inception back in the 1800s, late 1700s, early 1800s, the pharmaceutical industry, of course, was threatened by homeopathy because it was competition. And people actually, you know, could potentially be cured. And conventional medicine doesn't really cure people. They manage disease and symptoms. And, you know, I think there's room for everything. I'm not really anti-conventional medicine. There are lots of good things about conventional allopathic medicine. Even some of the drugs are useful.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, for chronic disease, it's all just about management and suppressing symptoms, not restoring the person to health, not, you know.
And sadly, that's the most profitable thing. Like, if you,
well, yeah,
if somebody has a health crisis and you give them a few pills and they get up and walk out, you know, that's fine. But if they say they're depressed and you put them on a medication for the rest of their life, that's obviously a lot more profitable. And that seems to be where everything is going.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, it's exactly the problem. And the pharmaceutical industry has become so rich and powerful that they can manipulate the whole system, essentially.
Right, but I mean, the irony is starting in the 19th century, maybe before. I mean, in the 19th century, the allopathic, what we could call the allopathic medical system, was enamored by metals. Things like mercury and arsenic and bismuth and things like that, which we now know are extremely toxic.
Yeah.
I mean, there was teething powder. There was a big problem with teething powder up into the 20th century, which was high in mercury, until eventually the allopathic medical system recognized that they were poisoning people with mercury, and it went out of favor. The original treatment for syphilis was, I think, a combination of arsenic and bismuth and one other metal. I can't remember
mercury,
the exact
mercury, mostly mercury.
Mercury, mm-hmm. Right. So it's pretty ironic that they would be so concerned about homeopathy.
Well, again, the concern came out of financial interests, you know, more than anything else, because, like you said already, if you cure somebody, then that person is no longer a consumer of this medication.
Yes. And, I mean, if the pharmaceutical industry had stayed a relatively small industry, it would be one thing, but it's got so mammoth that it can only sustain itself by many, many people being on long-term therapy,
mm-hmm.
or outrageously expensive therapy like mm-hmm. Cancer chemotherapy, which is sort of medium-term, not forever.
Mm-hmm.
So who is Bonnie Henry, and how does she
fit in? So then what happened is that somehow or another, and at the time when this story broke, I was actually presenting at a homeopathic case conference in Vancouver, so I was mm-hmm. at home, and I don't really have a cell phone, I'm not really tuned into the social media that much, and this all happened while I was away, you know, out of town. So when I came back, I had all these reporters calling me, and I had no idea what just happened, and they told me that the provincial health minister here, Bonnie Henry, our top doc here in BC,
mm-hmm.
had gone on record to make comments about the situation, and she had expressed grave concern publicly about the safety of this homeopathic remedy and this treatment.
Let's just stop there, because that's very interesting, because one of the criticisms of homeopathy is there's nothing there, it
exactly.
worked out really good. But now she's saying, well, maybe there's still some, I can't even remember if rabies is supposed to be a virus or a bacteria, but the pathogen, she's saying, might still be there, therefore it's dangerous.
Exactly. And you know what's really even more ironic is that she also said that, here, look at this, it's her quote, "It's hard for me to believe, as a physician, that anything that was made from a very serious lethal infection would have any therapeutic benefit," she said.
But wait a minute. Okay, so another point that you made earlier that mm-hmm. we need to go back to is you say that homeopathic remedies are sterilized. So even if it wasn't diluted, it still would be a dead pathogen.
Exactly.
And don't they make vaccines out of dead pathogens?
Yes, they do. Absolutely. And the rabies vaccine, of course, is given to every dog regularly.
Right.
And to most cats and many other animals and even to human beings. And it's full of actual rabies viruses.
Right, and supposedly killed, I believe.
Yeah, they are killed, but right. they are full of, like, you actually have the virus in the vaccine. In my case, there was no virus in the remedy.
That raises an interesting point of how do you know that a virus is dead when viruses are not considered living organisms? They're basically just chemicals.
That's actually a really interesting point I hadn't considered.
I don't know how that works, but maybe they like to poison things with formaldehyde or things like that to...
Right.
disrupt the whatever's in there, the RNA or the DNA,
yes.
and the proteins. But basically, the concept of a vaccine is that you take something that's related to the illness,
mm-hmm.
and you inject that into somebody to protect them from the illness. So it
that's
seems
right.
somewhat similar to homeopathy.
Yes, of course, very similar. In fact, there's a great deal of overlap between homeopathy and vaccination.
Hmm. Well, that is very interesting, but so she's the chief doctor. Does she have any power over you?
Well, not directly. Indirectly, yes, because she is the provincial health, the provincial health officer.
Mm-hmm.
So she reports to the Ministry of Health, and the Ministry of Health, I'm not exactly sure how the hierarchy works there, but I think they have some influence on the different professions. So earlier in the year, she or some other people had complained about a chiropractor who said something on Facebook about an increase, he's seeing an increase in shoulder injuries, potentially related to people getting vaccines in their shoulder, flu shots.
Yeah, actually, I read, I think, an article in the Washington Post about one of their reporters who had been injured. I think they were saying the problem is that depending where the needle goes, it can cause some, you know, nerve damage.
Right.
So that seems to be an accepted side effect of the flu vaccine, or I guess any vaccine that goes into the shoulder. But they were upset that a chiropractor had complained about that?
Yeah, they were upset that the chiropractor had posted an article about this, actually on his Facebook page. And as a result of that, some talk happened to discuss maybe these professions like chiropractic and naturopathic medicine, maybe we shouldn't be self-regulated anymore.
So what do you mean by self-regulated? Like chiropractors aren't part of a college?
Yes, they are, but chiropractic, naturopathic medicine, some other ones, and don't quote me too much on that because I'm not completely up to speed on that. We are allowed to be self-regulated, so we police ourselves. Okay?
But doesn't the allopathic...
Yeah, they do. They have the same thing. Like the College of Physicians and Surgeons is self-regulated. I mean, if you have a complaint about a doctor, you can file a complaint with the college and they investigate it.
And one of the complaints about allopathic colleges has been that when there is a doctor who causes problems, that many colleges, and I'm not saying this is universal, but in some cases, it seems like the college is more interested in sweeping it under the rug. Maybe move the doctor to another province or something where they can carry on. There's a number of doctors who've managed to do that rather than, you know, disciplining them. Because the problem with a self-regulated college is that it's the people who have an interest in their own business who are regulating themselves. So they don't want to damage their own business because of a bad apple, and they don't necessarily want to discipline one of their own colleagues.
I guess that's similar with us, except that, you know, the boards, for example, of our naturopathic college, the board consists of public members, you know. It's not just naturopathic doctors, but they are public members. And again, don't quote me on it because I'm not so involved in that end of things.
Right.
But it's not as if it's just naturopathic doctors policing themselves. Right.
Now, this chiropractor had published an article. Had he or she written this article?
No. The chiropractor only... There were two different incidents. So one chiropractor cross-posted an article about this shoulder injury issue on his Facebook page, kind of like what I did in a way. Except in my case, I wrote my own article.
Yeah, well, I'm saying this is like if I found that article from whatever, the Washington Post or whatever, and put it on my Facebook page and I was a chiropractor, what have I done except post a news article?
Yeah.
If you have a problem with the news article, then go to the source.
Well, of course, now the chiropractors have slightly different regulations than naturopathic doctors. So they're actually not allowed to talk about vaccines at all, more or less. Okay. Whereas we, as naturopathic physicians, at the moment, we are actually allowed to, you know, consult with people about these questions, except, you know, there are some limitations. And we are also allowed to actually give vaccines.
You're allowed to give vaccines, like regular vaccines?
Yeah, or we are. Real vaccines. So as naturopathic doctors in BC now, several years ago, the profession gained the right to prescribe allopathic medications. I didn't bother with the training. I've been practicing for 27 years without allopathic drugs. I mean, you know, it's not like I really need them. And I can refer when I need somebody to prescribe, right? But, we gained the right to prescribe most allopathic medications with a few exceptions. Like, we're not allowed to prescribe opioids and such things.
Right.
But, you know...
Which even the allopathic doctors should be heavily restricted.
Yes, of course. Right. We know how... That's a different problem.
Yes.
But so in order for me to be able to do this, most of my colleagues have taken this extra training. It's, you know, a few months of training and $2,000 and whatever, and then you have your license to prescribe drugs.
Right.
And so theoretically, I could do the same, and then I can prescribe antibiotics, and I can also administer vaccines. I have to take another training for the vaccines.
Right.
I'm actually taking that right now, even though I don't have the other training yet, but I'm interested in it. You know, I want to know what is being taught. So we are technically, legally allowed to provide vaccination and to therefore consult with patients about
it. I mean, that's interesting because I thought that naturopaths were kind of against vaccinations.
Not necessarily. I mean, again, it's all really, nothing is all good or bad, you see. Like, there's a lot to be said for preventative medicine, you know. I mean, I'm not against vaccination in principle. I am in favor of preventative medicine.
Right.
And vaccines, in principle, are a really good idea. The problem is that, just like with antibiotics, you know, more and more and more and more vaccines have been developed, you know, and now we're getting problems as a result of too many vaccines or ingredients in the vaccines that really haven't been properly tested, etc. So there's no concerns from that end, you know, just like we had with antibiotics. I mean, they've helped to save millions of lives and still do every day. But because we started giving them for every little thing, now we have other problems as a result of that, you see. So, you know, everything has its place, and we have to remember that these are powerful substances. Like I said, drugs have a place, but you don't need to give a very powerful medication for something that can be treated with something much more gentle.
Well, I guess the opioid epidemic, I don't want to get into it too deeply, but I think that that was an easy way out. You know, somebody has pain, maybe from working in a factory for 20 years, and, you know, damaged joints and things. So instead of considering alternatives like acupuncture or physiotherapy or even something like marijuana, they just leapt to the opioids, which of course are really good at dealing with pain, but they have these nasty side effects like addiction.
So to get back to the story, then because Bonnie Henry went on record saying these things on public record to the CBC News and on television and so on, all of a sudden this thing just completely blew out of all proportion. Right? Because now she went on record saying, oh, this naturopathic doctor did something potentially harmful. And that's when things really went out of hand. And
So your naturopathic college also got involved.
Well, they got involved. They were called. And again, I'm not exactly sure what exactly they said. I mean, I tried to follow this as little as possible. But the naturopathic college initially basically, I believe, just said, well, it's a legal, you know, it's not, lucinum is not illegal, and it's part of homeopathy, and that's, I think, pretty much all they said. But then the Globe and Mail published a really salacious headline, which read something like, growling child treated with, naturopath boasts of curing growling child with rabid dog saliva. And then the naturopathic association, so there's the naturopathic college that regulates us as a profession, and that protects the public. So let's say one of us does something wrong, okay? One of my patients isn't happy with what I did. They can contact the college and complain, and the college will then maybe talk to me. And, all right? So we also have an association, a naturopathic association, that's really for the doctors. And it's to help the doctors in their, with the practices, and to present a good picture of naturopathic medicine to the public and so on. And the president of the naturopathic association then stepped up and filed a complaint against me with the college.
Saying that you were damaging the image of naturopaths in Bruce.
You know, at the time they didn't tell me. Like, I contacted them and they refused to tell me what the complaint was about. But through the grapevine, one of my colleagues was really upset with the president, and she called one of them up and said, what's going on? You know, why are you doing this? And the president basically said, look, we had to do something. You know, this is like a political issue. So that's why we had to file this complaint.
But, I mean, it seems strange they would file a complaint against you and you wouldn't get to see the complaint.
Yeah, I know. I know. A lot of weird things happened.
And so then what happened? Like, you talked about a gag order that occurred.
Well, that was from a different problem, which was something else I'm involved in. Which is called CEASE therapy. This is something that was developed by a Dutch medical doctor and homeopath who was very interested in autism. So over the years, he figured out more or less that vaccines in some cases can cause behavioral and developmental disorders. So it was like observation, trial and error. Patients would come in, they would say, you know, my son had this shot and now he doesn't speak anymore, whatever. And Dr. Tino Smith then started using homeopathic remedies made from vaccines and also medications and also various toxins and so on to try and help those children. And once again, remember the like cures like idea. So So a substance, right, that can cause problems in a healthy person can potentially heal similar problems in somebody mm-hmm. who already has them. So sometimes that also applies to the same cures, same idea. Therefore, if you've had, for example, I had a client here the other day, she had a lot of antibiotics and she has all sorts of problems now
right.
that are related to the antibiotics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So she might improve if I give her a homeopathic remedy made from antibiotics.
Okay.
And
but if you give a homeopathic remedy made from vaccines, that's
mm-hmm.
kind of saying that the vaccines were the cause of the autism.
Yes.
Which is a toxic thing to say these days.
Well, you're not allowed to. So basically, that's where the gag order comes in. So I was interested in this, and I took training, and I've worked with this system for a while. Now, the problem is that Tina Smith named the system, okay, CEAS, which is short for Complete Elimination of Autism Spectrum Expression.
Right, which
so,
is a promise of a total cure.
Yeah, and that's a problem, of course, because you can never really promise anything, right? So
mm-hmm.
I can understand, again, why that is problematic. I have never promised anybody to cure anything, autism, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, I've never promised anything. I always tell my patients, I can't make any promises. You can't, you know? But based on, you know, clinical experience and based on what other doctors have done, you know, we can certainly try this treatment, and there is a possibility that it might help.
Right.
And just try it, and if it helps, good, and if it doesn't, then we try something else.
And it's not like, again, it's not like allopathic medicine doesn't overpromise. I mean, that's a big
really
part
overpromise.
Of, it's a big part of pharmaceutical marketing,
of
is, you know, twisting the data so that they're promising big changes, but when you actually look at the data, actually the data was really a minuscule or almost insignificant change.
Yeah.
But
well,
so based on that, they told you you couldn't talk about certain things. Can you talk about what you can't talk about?
Okay, so what happened is this, all right? Another skeptic from a UK organization. So this guy, his mission in life is to make homeopathy illegal.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I forget his name. But anyway, he files complaints with various places around the world, and he filed a complaint, again, against me and two of my colleagues who also offer this treatment in their practices, offered. With the college.
Right.
And it was a really ridiculous complaint, okay? Make a long story short, it's just a lot of hot air. But again, the name of the therapy is problematic, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the college basically told us that, you know, we couldn't advertise that and we shouldn't be offering this and take it off our websites and so on. Like this referral this to that particular therapy by that name.
Right.
Okay? And also that we had to remove any material to do with any vaccine controversy and criticism of vaccination, etc., from our websites, and that we weren't supposed to talk to our patients about any connection between vaccination and autism.
We do live in a free country, right?
Well, of course, but, you know, again, and they have refused to offer, to answer a question which I had, which is, what happens if a patient comes in and they say to me, which happens regularly, you know, my child had a reaction to the vaccination and this is what happened. Am I not supposed to talk to them about it and help them?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So are you allowed to use the therapy? You're just not allowed to advertise it? So somebody has to ask you if you have anything before you admit that you do?
Well, the therapy is nothing new. The therapy is a combination of homeopathy and nutritional interventions,
mm-hmm.
you know, certain supplements and so on. So it's nothing new. Like, that's something every naturopath does. Like, we often use more than one method at the same time,
mm-hmm.
right? So if somebody comes in with migraines, let's say, I might look at their diet and say, hey, maybe you want to cut out that coffee. You're drinking 5 cups a day. And I might also maybe give them some B vitamins. And then maybe I might give them a homeopathic remedy, you know? So it's not as if we only ever give one thing.
Right, right. Okay, I understand.
So this CEAS therapy is very similar. So it's basically, Tina Smith said, you know what, like, let's try and feed those children the best nutrition that we can get into them, ideally organic kind of food,
right.
good quality food. Let's put them on a few supplements which are known to reduce inflammation.
Right.
and good for the brain, like fish oil and vitamin C, like nothing spectacularly new.
Right.
And then we should also give them constitutional homeopathic remedies, which every homeopath does anyway, that matches their whole symptomatology. And in addition, if necessary, we can also maybe address any potentially causative layers that we can identify with remedies maybe made from those substances.
Right.
You know? And it doesn't have to be vaccines. Like, I have several children under my care who have autism, and they never had any vaccines. And it was antibiotics or Tylenol and other things that pushed them over the edge.
Right.
So, you know, it's not as if we can say that vaccines cause autism. It's not the case.
Right.
But any kind of chemical pressure in a susceptible system, a lot of it is about susceptibility.
Right.
If you have a susceptible individual, somebody who's already sensitive to chemicals, right, let's say, or they don't detoxify very well, or maybe they were low in certain nutrients at the time, and you expose that organism to certain stressors, certain kinds of toxins and so on, right, then at some point it might be too much and they might develop some kind of an issue as a result.
Right. Okay, I don't want to run out of time, so you've basically said you can basically still help these people, but you can't call it cease therapy. So
that's right.
Okay, that seems like a typically bureaucratic response to a political crisis. Okay, but you filed a complaint against Bonnie Henry? Or
I did.
Yes.
So
tell us about
couple
that.
Of friends of mine and I were talking about this. Of course, as I said, I received a lot of support, right, from all around the world, including as far away as New Zealand and Italy. People were offering me free vacations. They were offering me money to pay for any legal costs.
Wow.
Yeah, they sent a ton of very helpful emails and moral support, like literally a ton. Anyway, so one of my colleagues said he was going to file a complaint against Bonnie Henry with the Ministry of Health, another colleague, a friend. And he talked to me about that, and then we talked to some other people, and we all said, that's a really good idea. We should file some complaints, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote, we collaborated to write a complaint, and then Ted focused mostly on vaccines because that's his area, and also I was just now gagged, you know, about talking about that topic, you know, for now anyway. And my other friend talked about nutrition, and my expertise is homeopathy, so we filed several complaints. We filed three official complaints with the Ministry of Health about Bonnie Henry, and I filed mine specifically about her speaking about homeopathy in this way, because it's actually misleading of the public the way she spoke about homeopathy.
Right. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
No.
It would be fine to say, it would be one thing to say, you know, she gave a useless therapy because we know there's nothing in homeopathy.
Mm-hmm.
That at least, you know, would make some sense. But to say that it's potentially dangerous when it's sterilized and diluted to nothing, that makes no sense at all.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. And what's the status of this complaint?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing has happened so far.
Well, bureaucracies are good at delaying politically sensitive things.
No, we put it, we publicized this fairly widely as well on our respective contacts and so on. And it's quite possible that other people have written letters and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also going to file a complaint with her, with the College of Physicians and Surgeons. And, you know, and also, once again, with my MLA. My MLA is actually John Horgan, who is also the Premier of British Columbia.
Right, the NDP Premier of British Columbia, Okay.
So, you know, it's not right for somebody who is in a position of power like Dr. Henry is to be misleading of the public in such a manner.
Ted Kuntz, who I believe is the colleague you were talking about, the head of Vaccine Choice Canada, talked about a Beijing direct declaration of health from the World Health Organization, which I found very interesting.
Yes.
And I'll quote a little bit from it. He said that the knowledge of traditional medicines, treatments, and practices should be respected, preserved, promoted, and communicated widely. Governments have a responsibility for the health of their people and should formulate policies, regulations, and standards to ensure appropriate, safe, and effective use of traditional medicine. And thirdly, the communication between conventional and traditional medicine providers should be strengthened, and appropriate training programs should be established for health professionals, medical students, and relevant researchers.
Mm-hmm.
I found it interesting because this is the World Health Organization, which is often accused of being a mouthpiece for pharmaceutical companies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yet it's actually promoting the use of traditional medicines, and I assume that homeopathy would come under that.
Yes, that's correct.
Can I agree?
Yes, I actually discovered this by, you know, we were all working together to figure this out, and I discovered the Beijing Declaration and then shared it with Ted and Linda, and, you know, quite obviously our own provincial health officer is unaware of this declaration.
Right.
Which is, like you said, intended to promote and respect natural, like, natural therapies.
Right. I mean, I would be a little more sympathetic to the allopathic medical community if they didn't have such a huge problem with damage and deaths from their own remedies.
Yes.
The 100,000 that I quoted from before, I mean, that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in the early 2000s based on the year 1998. And that was just covering properly prescribed medicines in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you include probably over-the-counter drugs and drugs in prisons and in the military and other places,
mm-hmm.
It would be much greater than 100,000.
Yeah.
And there's no way that alternative medicine kills more than a handful of people. You said maybe none. But it's very difficult to think that if there was a large death toll from alternative medicine, that it wouldn't be getting major attention.
Oh, yeah.
And yet it's savagely attacked by people who clearly have a financial interest in suppressing alternatives.
I know, and that's the main problem. And unfortunately, we as a population, so I don't know who your listeners are, but we as, you know, the people, right? The only way this is going to change is if we, as the people, step up and you know, talk to our government representatives and tell them, you know, deluge them with letters. Like, it's quite helpful to write one letter a month. Write to your MLA,
yes.
Right? Work with the system in such a way that they know that we, as the individual citizens of Canada, want this kind of health care. And,
right.
You know, that we want the truth and we want collaboration between all the different modalities, because it's about the citizens. It's about our health. It's about our well-being. And it's about our future. It's about our children. It's about the next generation, you know. It's about so many things.
Right.
And we deserve to have choice. Like, number one, we deserve to have choice. Number two, we deserve to have fiscal responsibility. Right now, the way the medical system is run, it's just hemorrhaging our governments half to death, because so much of the budget goes towards conventional medicine and predominantly drugs.
Right, right.
When a lot of that could be completely avoided, I believe, seriously, like if, let's say, we all of a sudden were able over the next year, by some miracle, to change the entire healthcare system and focus it on homeopathy, naturopathy, acupuncture, things like that, we will probably have 80 or 90% cost savings in our healthcare system.
I agree that the allopathic system, apart from its other problems, is outrageously expensive.
Yeah.
We've run out of time, so I would just like to thank you for sharing your knowledge and your experiences navigating the healthcare system with me.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you for listening to episode 189 of The Infectious Myth.